Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by gym members on the 3rd. Goldman Sachs. You've heard of them. Mr. Goldman and Mr. Sachs to you. Well, that firm, that financial firm, has asked its team to, quote, coordinate on events and spending around the Paris Olympics in an attempt to stop employees sneaking off to the games and having the bank pick up the tab. New York-based Goldman emailed employees telling them any trips to the European capital, Paris, must first be approved by the finance department if they're traveling between July 26th and August 11th. Why, that's when the Olympics are being held. The aim of the email is to cut down on meetings in France set up by staffers to conveniently coincide with the games, with the bank presumably picking up at least part of the bill for corporate travel. Any bills for a stay in the city will also come at a premium during the games. In January, a consumer interest group reported Paris hotels were cashing in by hiking prices to over $1,000 for opening night. But like any major sporting event, the Olympics will be a hive of corporate hospitality, courtesy of premium sponsor LVMH. Guests can expect wines and spirits from Moët Hennessy to be flowing. The luxury conglomerate pledged $166 million to sponsor the Olympic and Paralympic events. And while the sums seem steep, companies that have pledged funds to the Summer Olympics insist, according to Reuters, they'll get a return on investment. This is not charity. It's a great way, says the CEO of Air France. It's a great way for Air France to show the best of itself and to help show the best of France. Drug maker Sanofi is estimated to have spent up to $160 million on the event, sending over 2,000 employees as volunteers in a bid to catch the eye of Gen Z and millennials. The French company also sponsoring 14 athletes and coaches across different sports from basketball to para athletics, said it wanted to use the event to show that it was, quote, cool, unquote. And Peacock, a Comcast-owned streaming service, will raise prices of its premium and premium plus plans by $2 a month, looking to cash in on its streaming rights to the Olympic Games this summer. Peacock Premium, an ad-supported offering, will cost $7.99 per month. Its ad-free offering will be priced at $13.99 a month. Will the guys and gals at Goldman Sachs be able to afford it? That's the question of the week. But it's the Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Hello, welcome to the show.
Sitting here, eating my heart out, waiting for some lover to call. Dialed about 1,000 numbers lately. Almost ran the phone off the wall. I'm looking for some hot stuff, baby, this evening. I need some hot stuff, baby, tonight. I'm looking for some hot stuff, baby, this evening. Gonna find some hot stuff. I need some hot stuff tonight.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa.
I'm looking for
whoa, whoa,
love tonight.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Sitting here eating my heart out, waiting, waiting for some lover to call. Dialed about 1,000 numbers lately, almost ran the phone off the wall. I'm looking for some hot stuff, baby, to see me. I need some hot stuff, baby, tonight. I'm looking for some hot stuff, baby, to see me.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show, and warning you once again about our old friends, microplastics. This from Fast Company. All right, then. Microscopic particles, microplastics, can get into our bodies via water and air. They carry toxic chemicals, which can get into our bloodstream through our skin. Yes, blame our skin. Plastic is full of chemicals. They've been linked, well, they've been used to make plastic flame retardant, couches, carpets, building materials, electronics, so forth. These chemicals have been linked to cancer, developmental problems, and other health effects in humans. I blame the humans. Some of them have since been banned, not the humans, the plastics, like brominated flame retardant. Can't get that no more. It's been banned in the U.S. since 2004, but they still exist in pollution and in older products that shed or leach out microplastics. Sounds like a wonderful world, doesn't it? Researchers at the University of Birmingham, not Birmingham, that would be in Alabama, this is Birmingham in England, previously found that microplastics leach such chemicals into human sweat. Will you stop that with the sweating? We're exposed to microplastics in a variety of ways. Plastic fabrics and textiles, whether on clothes or furniture, shed microplastics when worn or touched. Microplastics are in indoor dust. I thought that was clean. Cosmetic products can contain microplastics, which come in direct contact with our skin. Even plastic baby bottles shed microplastics when they're warmed up. Yes, your little kid can have cold milk. Now, a study published in the journal Environmental International found that those chemicals can cross the skin barrier into our bodies. How much of these chemicals your skin absorbs can depend on how sweaty you are. More hydrated skin absorbs more chemicals. Researchers found that skin can take as much as 8% of the exposed chemical. Quote, microplastics are everywhere in the environment, yet we still know relatively little about the health problems they can cause. Our research shows they play a role as carriers of harmful chemicals, which can get into our bloodstream through the skin. That's according to the author of the piece in Environment International, Ovokiroi Abafe. Continuing to quote, these chemicals are persistent, so with continuous or regular exposure to them, there will be a gradual accumulation to the point where they start to cause harm, unquote. The research team conducted their study by using 3D human skin models instead of animals or human test projects. Over a 24-hour period, they exposed the models to two common microplastics containing polybrominated diphenyl ethers, ether, a class of brominated flame retardants, again with the bromination. Researchers created their own microplastics by grinding down polyethylene and polypropylene and then applied these onto the surface of the skin models. The researchers say that it is the first experimental evidence that chemicals that are additives in microplastics can get into our bloodstream through our sweat and skin. They plan on conducting more research to understand other ways microplastics could bring toxic chemicals into our bodies and how we might mitigate that exposure risk. In the meantime, stop with the sweating. And now, news of our friends, the freedom-loving people from the land of 4,000 princes, Saudi Arabia. Citizens of Saudi Arabia have been increasingly arrested for sharing anti-Israel sentiments on social media in recent months, according to Bloomberg. The concerns in Riyadh are that the war between Israel and Hamas, as well as attacks launched by other Iranian proxies, will send the Middle East spiraling into an all-out war. Among those detained recently was an executive involved at a company in Crown Prince bin Salman's plan to strengthen the economy. According to Bloomberg, citing unnamed sources familiar with the matter, the executive reportedly made comments about the Gaza war that were deemed incendiary. Another detainee had reportedly called for Saudi Arabian citizens to boycott American-owned brands operating in the kingdom. Speaking to Bloomberg, a source close to the Saudi government says the arrests stem from concerns that pro-Iranian influences will harm the country's security. The report states there are no precise figures on the number of arrests made since October 7th, when Hamas attacked Israel. The crackdown comes as the United States continues to work with Riyadh, capital of Saudi Arabia, on trying to find a path to normalization with Israel. In a visit to the Gulf state earlier this week, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said that intensive work had been done over the last week to try to forge an agreement and that the deal is, quote, potentially very close to completion, unquote. And that, of course, you can't take to the bank. Hi, I've got some funds here that are potentially very close to existence. And now,
Save to Safe Demeter.
Dateline Meylusu, Kyrgyzstan. It's a dateline you don't see every day. And I don't pronounce it every day, clearly. Dams holding vast amounts of uranium mine tailings above the fertile Fergana Valley in Central Asia are unstable. They threaten a possible Chernobyl-scale nuclear disaster if they collapse that would make the region uninhabitable. Studies have revealed, according to Reuters, dams holding about 700,000 cubic meters of uranium mine tailings in Kyrgyzstan have become unreliable following a landslide 7 years ago. A further landslide or earthquake could send their contents into a river system used to irrigate Kyrgyz, Uzbek, and Tajik farmlands. The studies at the Soviet-era radioactive waste disposal facility showed that event would possibly displace millions of people, in those three countries. The studies are part of a project by the European Commission and the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. It's meant to reinforce the facilities. and they show that the type of waste involved cannot be safely contained in their current locations and needs to be moved away from the banks of the Meleusu River. I didn't even know that it had banks. The Fergana Valley, where the contaminated water would go, is the most densely populated area in Central Asia, as it turns out, with 16 million people, many of whom are involved in the cultivation of cotton, rice, grains, fruit, and vegetables. In other words, you know, nothing to do with paper. If a landslide causes the river to burst, the waste from the two mine dumps will enter the water, says a manager of the Meleusu Radiology Lab. He continues, the environmental disaster would almost be comparable with Chernobyl. Well, don't go comparing with Chernobyl if it's not really comparable. You know, almost. I'm almost through with the show. Studies have shown that the waste in those dumps is liquid, making it more hazardous, and it could flow into the river in the event of a strong earthquake, says an engineer with the German firm GEOS, contracted by the Kyrgyz government. That, he says, would be a horrible catastrophe. This water is used to irrigate fields, which means agricultural produce would be contaminated. The dam's foundations were weakened by water during a 2017 landslide, which raised the river's water level, bringing it closer to the uranium tailings, according to engineers. The Bishkek government, I believe Bishkek is the capital of Kyrgyzstan, and, that government estimates that $23 to $26 million would be needed to move the waste from the two unsafe locations to one further from the river. And who's got that kind of money on them? Goldman Sachs. Dateline Bismarck, North Dakota, the chairman of North Dakota's Public Service Commission has a word of advice for those who may be looking at nuclear for power production in North Dakota. This is North Dakota, where they don't kill dogs. The state's Department of Commerce is studying whether nuclear could be an option to meet the growing electricity demand, especially from projects like data centers, which use all that electricity to generate cryptocurrencies. I'm sorry, mine. Public Service Commission Chairman Randy Christman says he supports nuclear power, but he wonders where the waste would be buried. Once that big question is answered, he says, time can be spent working out the finer details. Christman said all around the country projects are proposed, but have not yet come to fruition because of the lack of disposal facilities. Other commissioners say public education will be necessary to gather support for nuclear as an option. Well, why not educate the public as to where the waste will be buried while you're at it? And Dateline Sega Japan, the Municipal Assembly of Genkai in southwestern Japan gave the go-ahead a week ago for the town to request a preliminary survey by the state to gauge its suitability to host an underground disposal site for highly radioactive waste. That's the first assembly in the country hosting a nuclear plant to approve such a survey request, says the mayor. He plans to make the final decision next month. No, this month, regarding whether to request the survey. That's the first part of a three-stage, 20-year process to select a permanent storage site for waste from nuclear power generation. 20 years is all. If the mayor gives the green light, the prefecture town that hosts Kyushu Electric Company's four-reactor Genkai Nuclear Power Station will receive up to $12.9 million in state subsidies for allowing the survey, which will check ground conditions and volcanic activity based on published geological sources. The Sega governor, meanwhile, expressed reluctance about locating a waste disposal site in Genkai, with the prefecture already hosting a nuclear plant, he told a press conference. It would be unbalanced for Sega to shoulder such a burden, unquote. Three local associations in the construction, restaurant, and accommodation sectors of the local economy submitted requests for the survey to the assembly. Some are hoping the subsidies and survey activity will prop up the local economy. Japan, like other countries, this according to Kyoto News, like other countries, is struggling to find permanent disposal sites for nuclear waste. Only two municipalities, Sutsu and Kamenai, have approved preliminary site surveys. They commenced in 2020, so they should be done by 2040. The surveys have taken longer than the scheduled 2 years, see, and it remains unclear whether either process will move to the second stage. Local opposition in those communities remains strong. High-level radioactive waste produced when extracting uranium and plutonium from spent fuel must be stored in bedrock at least 1,000 feet underground for tens of thousands of years until radioactivity declines to levels that are not harmful to human health or the environment. Or, if things don't go so well, neither.
Get no rest, don't know how I work all day. When will I learn? Memories get in the way. I walk around, I can't hear a sound, folks talking loud, but I don't see at all. I gotta get away, gotta get away. I don't
know where to go, it's hopeless so. Leave it alone.
Well, I spent all that day fixing up to go somewhere. Thought I was late, and I found she wasn't there. I guess I'll find love, peace of mind some other time, but I still have today. I gotta get away, gotta get away. I don't
know where to go. It's hopeless so. I guess I'll leave it alone.
Kane's people play night or day. They're just not matching what they should do. Keeps me feeling. Can't stop it, spending all day thinking just of you.
Sound, took a look around, and I could see her face. Smile as she came, calling out my name. So I
know where to go. We'll take it slow. I guess I'll call it a day.
Games people play night or day, they're just not matching what they should do. Can't stop it, spending all day thinking just of you. Games people play
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. Authorities have expanded an investigation of clergy sexual abuse in the Roman Catholic Church right here in New Orleans. It's being expanded to include senior church officials suspected of shielding predatory priests for decades and failing to report their crimes to law enforcement. This from the AP. Louisiana State Police carried out a sweeping search warrant last week at the Archdiocese, seeking a long-secreted cache of church records and communications between local church leaders and the Vatican about the church's handling of clergy sexual abuse. The search signaled a new phase of the investigation that will seek to determine what particular church leaders, including Archbishop Gregory Amond and his predecessors, knew about claims that the warrant describes as, quote, ignored and in many cases covered up, unquote. An Archdiocese spokesman says the Archdiocese of New Orleans has been openly discussing the topic of sex abuse for over 20 years. In keeping with this, we're also committed to working with law enforcement in these endeavors, unquote. The warrant contained several new details about the sex trafficking investigation. No, you don't want. Oh, okay. Including claims that some victims were sexually assaulted in a seminary swimming pool after being ordered to skinny dip. Separately, the warrant says predatory priests developed a system of sharing victims by giving them gifts that they were instructed to pass on to clergymen at other schools or churches. It was said, according to the state police investigator writing in an affidavit in support of the warrant, it was said that the gift was a form of signaling to another priest that the person was a target for sexual abuse. The warrant sought an exhaustive range of personnel records, files contained in any and all safes, and documents showing the extent to which the Archdiocese continued supporting clergymen even after they were added to the so-called credibly accused list of suspected predators. The warrant also confirmed a parallel FBI examination of clergy sexual abuse reported by the AP a couple of years ago. That investigation has examined whether priests took children across state lines to mess with them. Many of the most explosive church records surfaced in a flood of sexual abuse lawsuits that drove the Archdiocese to seek Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection 4 years ago. The documents chronicle years of abuse claims, interviews with accused clergy, and a pattern of church leaders transferring problem priests, but they've been shielded under a sweeping confidentiality order in the bankruptcy case that has long hampered state and federal investigations. Quote, we've been forced against our own professional obligations to keep them secret, said attorneys who represent the accusers. The Vatican didn't respond to a request for comment, rarely weighs in on developments in local clergy abuse cases. But for decades, the message from Rome to local church leaders was to keep clergy abuse files in the secret archives. The Vatican still has not required abuse cases to be reported to police around the world. Wolf, around the world. Though it now says local church leaders should comply with whatever civil reporting laws are in place. Comply with the laws. What a nutty idea. In addition, as the clergy abuse scandal has continued to cause a credibility crisis for the Catholic hierarchy worldwide, Pope Francis 5 years ago removed the top-level secrecy that covered abuse cases, known as the pontifical secret. Prior to that, local church leaders regularly invoked the pontifical secret as a reason to resist criminal subpoenas. In theory, the removal of the secret removed any official barrier to such cooperation. In New Orleans, the search could deepen the legal peril for church leaders, exposing them to potential state court prosecutions, even as the federal Justice Department has struggled to identify federally prosecutable crimes related to clergy sexual abuse. Last year, an Orleans Parish grand jury indicted Lawrence Hecker, a now 92-year-old disgraced priest, on charges accusing him of sexually assaulting a teenage boy way back in 1975. An extraordinary prosecution that prompted the broader search of the archdiocese last week. Hecker has pleaded not guilty to counts of rape, kidnapping, aggravated crime against nature, and theft. He's accused of choking the teen unconscious under the guise of performing a wrestling move and then assaulting him. The archdiocese failed to report Hecker's admissions to law enforcement while permitting him to work around children until he quietly left the ministry in 2002. Church officials reassigned Hecker even after he was sent to a psychiatric facility in Pennsylvania and diagnosed as a pedophile, according to the warrant. Hecker was not the only member of the archdiocese sent to receive psychiatric testing based on allegations of child sexual abuse, it says in the warrant. The age of the Hecker case presents legal and evidentiary hurdles for prosecutors. They also face the political sensitivity of prosecuting a longtime Catholic clergyman in heavily Catholic New Orleans. Many predator priests, says the AP, have escaped criminal consequences in Louisiana for those reasons, making the scope of last week's search even more notable, if not incredible. And now,
he's not a general,
he commands no troops,
he's not an inspector,
he peeks at no stoops,
he's an
inspector general.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
A report by NASA's inspector general has disclosed new details about problems with the Orion spacecraft's heat shield and other issues that delayed its first crewed launch. Crewed meaning crew on it, not it's not fine, it's crewed. The May Day report by the Officer of Inspector General reviewed problems with the spacecraft, as well as ground equipment and the deep space network from the uncrewed Artemis 1 mission launched a couple years ago. One of the biggest issues was with the Orion heat shield. I'd like the heat shield to be working, wouldn't you? NASA disclosed months after the flight that more of the ablative heat shield material had been lost during reentry than expected, but added it has not posed a safety risk to the spacecraft. There were no crew members aboard that flight. NASA is still examining what happened to the heat shield, and that was one of the three issues that led the agency in January to delay the next mission in the Artemis program to no earlier than September, a year from now. According to the report, NASA found more than 100 locations on the heat shield where material chipped away unexpectedly during the Artemis 1 reentry. The report included images showing pockmarked portions of the heat shield that had not previously been released by the agency. The heat shield material, known as Avcoat, wore away differently than NASA engineers had predicted, cracking and breaking off the spacecraft in fragments that created a trail of debris rather than melting away as designed, said the IG report. The unexpected behavior of the Avcoat creates a risk that the heat shield may not sufficiently protect the capsule's systems and crew from the extreme heat of recovery on future missions, unquote. NASA has yet to find a root cause for the behavior of the heat shield material. Ground testing successfully recreated char loss, and the material in those tests has the same features as observed on the Artemis 1 heat shield. So the OIG report says NASA was able to recreate the loss. They could not reproduce the exact material response or flight environment experienced during Artemis 1. Understanding the heat shield performance was the top risk for the Artemis 2 mission. The focus, according to Deputy Administrator for the Moon to Mars program, says the focus is understanding the fundamental physics of the heat shield material and how it could come loose during reentry. Quote, when we stitch it all together, says the Deputy Associate Administrator for the program, we either will have flight rationale or we won't. Unquote. He wouldn't estimate when that would be done. NASA's response to the Inspector General report offered a planned completion date of the end of June. In addition to the heat shield loss, the OIG report said that 3 or 4 separation bolts on the base of the heat shield used to separate the service model before reentry experienced unexpected melting and erosion. The post-flight analysis blamed it on a thermal model discrepancy. NASA is going to redesign that separation bolt on later Orion spacecraft. Orion? Yes, sir. But for Artemis II, it'll install additional thermal protection material. Other issues cited in the report include issues with power distribution, a 4.5-hour loss of communications with Orion during the Artemis I missions, which the Inspector General linked to broader issues with the network. And the report also highlights previously documented damage to the mobile launch tower due in part to low-frequency acoustics that were not accurately modeled before the launch. Elevators were damaged because blast doors intended to protect them turned out to be fiberglass doors designed only to shield them from wind. Repairs to the mobile launcher cost $26 million, more than 5 times the $5 million NASA had planned for post-launch refurbishment. It's almost as if NASA is eligible for this next segment, namely, the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
The far-right cable network One America News, OAN, has retracted a story and apologized after it falsely claimed former President Trump's ex-lawyer Michael Cohen was the one who had an affair with Stormy Daniels and secretly used it to extort the Trump Organization. That was the fake story. Cohen and Daniels, you know, are both key witnesses against Trump in his ongoing New York State criminal trial. The announcement from OAN contained a public apology to Cohen for any harm the publication may have caused him, and said that the network regrets publishing the false allegations about a Cohen-Daniels affair, which they both denied. The network said the story would be removed from its website and social media accounts. The retraction did not include a financial payment, according to a person familiar with the matter. It was published last month, the story was, claiming, according to a single unnamed source, that Cohen and Daniels were in a years-long affair. It's just plain stupid, Cohen said in a statement about the story. OAN recently settled a defamation lawsuit with Smartmatic, a voting machine company that was falsely accused of rigging the election in 2020. The terms of that deal aren't public. The speed at which OAN settled and apologized speaks to the potential peril the small network could face from additional defamation lawsuits. Dateline Oregon. Amid strong public backlash, Governor Tina Kotek announced this week she will not create an office of the first spouse for her wife, Amy Kotek Wilson. But exactly what Wilson's role will look like moving forward is unclear. For now, Kotek said her wife's duties will be limited to making ceremonial appearances and listening to groups of Oregonians who request to be heard. Her comments come after more than 5 weeks of uncertainty and controversy over the First Lady's growing role. That confusion has jarred the governor's office and undermined public confidence in Kotek. Quote, I take responsibility for not being more thoughtful in my approach to exploring the role of first spouse, she said in a statement addressed to Oregonians. I am sorry for the way this conversation between my office and you has started. Bishop Robert Gruce of Saginaw, Michigan, has issued an apology for having referred to President Biden as stupid during a talk last month. He made the comment in a talk on April 5th titled, "Forgiveness is the Heart of Christianity." During the address, the prelate remarked that he doesn't have any anger toward the president. "I feel sorry for him. I'm not angry at him. He's just stupid," the bishop said, arguing that he didn't use the word in a derogatory way. "It's stupidity in the sense of he doesn't know until he does things," the bishop said. Now he argues that his remarks were taken out of context. Quote, "I was speaking in the context of forgiving the president and any people in government who offend us by their words and actions, that we cannot harbor resentment towards them, because in doing so, it would be sinful," Gruce said. "We must forgive them if we are to be free. I used the word stupid in reference to President Biden, recognizing that it was poor judgment in my choice of words. It was not meant to be disparaging, and I apologize." An Australian woman was barred from using Uber after the company deemed her first name to be offensive. Swastika Chandra tried to order food from Uber Eats last year. When she typed in her name, a pop-up told her it violated the company terms and she'd have to change it. Uber's guidelines restrict names that contain potentially offensive words. Swastika comes from a Sanskrit word meaning good fortune or well-being. It's a symbol that has been relevant to many religions across Asia, like Jainism and Buddhism, long before it was co-opted by you-know-who. "They don't know that the Hindus used it for thousands of years before Hitler used it in the wrong way," Chandra said. Her name was common in Fiji, where she grew up, and which has a large Indian population. "I'm very proud of my name," she said. "I believe in the good that comes with it, and I'm not changing it for anyone." 5 months later, Uber reinstated her account and apologized to Chandra. It took interventions by the Hindu Council of Australia and the New South Wales Attorney General. Quote, "We've apologized to Ms. Chandra for the inconvenience this caused her, and we appreciate her patience as we reviewed the matter, which took longer than we hoped it would," Uber said. And they'll be there in a minute. The Australian airline Qantas this week apologized after some customers using the airline's app were shown the name, flight details, and loyalty status of other passengers. The national carrier of Australia said there was no indication this was a cybersecurity incident, and that its current investigation suggests that the data breach was caused by a technology issue related to recent system changes. During two periods on Wednesday morning, some users of the Qantas app were shown the details of other members of the airline's frequent flyer program, their name, upcoming flight details, loyalty points balance, and status. The breach did not give visibility over the financial information of the other passengers. Customers were not able to transfer or use other people's points, and there were no reports of customers boarding flights using incorrect details. Qantas advised customers to log out and then back in to their frequent flyer app account. Quote, "We sincerely apologize to all customers impacted and continue to monitor the Qantas app slowly," the airline said in a statement phrased in an unrecognizable accent. Following the Los Angeles Lakers' first-round loss to the Denver Nuggets earlier this week, former L.A. Lakers superstar Magic Johnson took to social media to give his thoughts on the situation. He posted on X of how the Lakers had nobody to blame but themselves, especially due to load management all year. "The Lakers have nobody but themselves to blame. They wouldn't have been in the play-in game or finished as a seventh seed this season if they hadn't lost so many games because of load management." After the post came out, Johnson came under fire for fans for being completely wrong. Load management wasn't the issue with the Lakers. Load management is where during the regular basketball season, teams rest their stars to keep them in good shape for the much more important playoffs to come. But the league requires those players to actually participate in regular season games because fans have bought tickets to them. Load management wasn't the issue with the Lakers. The normally present Johnson showed a tone-deaf response, according to Sports Illustrated. He since apologized for the tweet, updating the reason he believed the Lakers lost. Quote, Laker Nation, I have to apologize to the Lakers organization. It was injuries that plagued the Lakers this season, not load management. Unquote. Well, it was injury management. It was close. Tampa Bay Lightning coach John Cooper opened his end-of-season news conference this week, apologizing for making what he called an inappropriate analogy of putting skirts on goalies. This is hockey we're talking about. After the Game 5 loss that eliminated his team, the Lightning, from the playoffs Monday night, he vented about two questionable goaltender interference rulings that contributed to Florida's 6-1 win. The Lightning had two goals disallowed when the NHL Situation Room, was Wolf in there, deemed a player interfered with Sergei Bobrovsky each time. Cooper, the NHL's longest tenured coach, said he was sincerely sorry, especially as a father of two daughters who play sports and a supporter of women's hockey. It's one of those minutes where if you could just reach back and grab the words back, I would have. Quite frankly, it was wrong, and I've got to go and explain myself to my girls. I sincerely apologize to all I offended. It's pained me more than the actual series loss itself. As his law enforcement career officially ended, this is another story, former Adams County, Colorado Sheriff Rick Reigenborn stood at a defense table this week. He stood erect. The formerly loquacious, colorful ex-sheriff answered the judge's questions in a soft, contrite monotone as he pleaded guilty in Denver District Court to a felony forgery charge and two misdemeanors. Quote, I sincerely apologize, he told the judge. I did make a mistake. I paid for that dearly, and I'd continue to pay for that and will for the rest of my life. I apologize to the men and women of the county, to the Attorney General's office, and to the citizens of Adams County, unquote. He was charged last year for falsifying training records and attempting to influence public servants by creating phony records of online and live law enforcement training that he never completed during his only term as the county's elected sheriff. And a hugely disruptive cyber attack a couple months ago exposed clear technology flaws at a United Health Group subsidiary, lawmakers said this week, raised difficult questions about whether the Minnetonka, Minnesota-based healthcare giant has become too big. United Health, that is. Andrew Witte, the United Health executive, offered an apology during testimony before the Senate Finance Committee. He disclosed that hackers accessed a portal at the company's Change Healthcare unit that lacked multi-factor authentication protections. The breach exposed a significant failure to comply with Cybersecurity 101, said the committee chair. There was bipartisan criticism of what Senator called a monopoly on steroids. Some senators also questioned why United Health couldn't restore its systems more quickly. By Witte's own admission, the hack could involve the personal information of up to one of every three Americans. And Witte, the chief executive, said he was frustrated by the technology problems as well. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
It's so easy to slip. It's so easy.
Ladies and gentlemen, did you notice, I certainly did, that when South Dakota Governor Noem revealed in an excerpt from her upcoming book that she had killed her dog, shot her dog Cricket in the mouth, she also revealed that she'd shot, missed once, and then second time killed a goat who also lived on her farm. And there was so much more attention devoted to the dog than the goat. Now, maybe it's that the dog had a name, Cricket, cute name for a dog, and the goat was nameless. Or maybe it's just we like dogs better than goats. But just a, you know, just a word of sympathy for the goat. Probably smellier than the dog. But you can't milk the dog. That's it for this week's edition of the show. The program returns. Is that right? You can't? Next week at the same time over these same stations. Or at the time of your choice on your audio device of choice. Love to have you along again next time. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts. Hurry, we're running out. And playlist of the music heard here on, and all sorts of other stuff to listen to and watch and read and slather on yourself, all at harryshearer.com. And yeah, I'm still on that good for nothing website with a one-letter name. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.